I want to be the part of their event that they don't have to worry about. They can check it off the list, which is one of the reasons why I generally get paid in advance on booking, because then it's done. They don't have to chase me down with a check the day of. It's off their list.
Hi, and welcome to the Creative Solutions Podcast, where we interview cutting-edge creative artists, entrepreneurs, and innovators who are changing the world. We also bring you tips and techniques that you can implement. This episode is brought to you by my favorite productivity hack, the Brain FM app, this podcast's host, Podbean, as well as my book, Speak From Within. Hey there, this is Isolde with a special announcement. I know that you're excited about this week's guest. I am too, but you need to hear this before we get into the episode. While Eric Henning teaches general principles of money and does individual business coaching, he cannot and does not provide investment, tax, or legal advice. Please consult a professional licensed in your place of residence for specific tax, legal, or investment advice. Hello, hello, and welcome to the Creative Solutions Podcast. I'm your host, Isolde Trachtenberg. It is the second Monday, which means it's Money Monday, with financial expert and professional magician, Eric Henning. Eric, welcome to the show.
Hey there. I'm so glad to be back. Oh my gosh, so exciting. It's been a crazy, crazy month. We've had so much fun.
Oh yeah? What's been going on?
Well, we have two Washington Magic shows kind of close together. We had one last Thursday, which was our 42nd consecutive sold-out show at the Arts Club of Washington.
Excellent.
Which was so much fun. And then we have another one coming up tomorrow. It was last Saturday. Excuse me. and again, also sold out. The theme last week was Classics of Magic. This time around, it was Magic Around the World. And we're just having a good time. We're having a lot of fun. Some of my students are performing there in the parlor before the show, doing some of their new stuff that we're working on. It's just very gratifying to see. And then on Monday, this past Monday, I was able to, I was the special guest for the McBride Magic and Mystery School's weekly class, Magic School Monday. I was lecturing, doing a thing I do for magicians. I have a lecture about my emergency lunchbox show. I have a stage show, a 45-minute stage show that'll play in a 500-seat theater that fits in a box just about the size of a lunchbox. And that lives in my car. That's for emergencies in case you walk into, because you never walk into a gig, especially an agent booked gig, where there's surprises, right? You never had that happen.
Oh, no, never. It always goes perfectly.
We get booked for strolling or close-up magic, and then we get there, and they say, oh, yeah, here's the stage. We got 300 people. We got chairs set up and everything. Go ahead and do your stage show. And it's like, oh, great, terrific. So you just have to be ready for anything. And also, sometimes we forget props. Sometimes the airlines lose our luggage. So if you have equipment that can fit in. In fact, Doc Dixon is a dear friend of mine who was on Penn & Teller Fool Us. Has a whole book about this. He travels, his entire show and his clothes fit in one carry-on. He does not check bags, and he flies all over the world doing his show. And he has one Apache carry-on, and it's great. It's great. He doesn't have to worry about it. Everything's there. We have a saying, we have what we call the lesson, which is he who does the most with the least wins. and so we learned to bring less on. And we have a name for people who fail to learn the lesson. We call them morons.
Oh.
And so, ba-dum-bum. So, yeah, it's you can see a pro because they can fit their whole act in a cigar box or whatever, and it's unbelievable. George Schindler, who's the dean of the SAM, Society of American Magicians, who's just like 99 or something now, 95, his act in the 50s and 60s, he could do a 45-minute stage act out of his pockets. The man's a god. It's incredible.
That is incredible.
Yeah, that's kind of the holy grail, because my mission in life is, I'm getting on now, just had another birthday. And, my mission in life is I don't want to be moving furniture or sound systems when I go to a show. I don't want to be hauling all that. That's what happens when you're in your 20s. You want to do big stage illusions. And then when you're 50 and your back goes out, you become a mentalist.
For
and
sure.
All your equipment comes from Office Depot or Staples.
Right. You have a piece of paper and a pencil and you're good to go.
Exactly. And you can do an hour.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's amazing, actually, because in those moments when you show up and everything is different than you imagined it would be. I remember one time I was booked to do a tarot reading gig. So I show up with all my stuff, ready to set up this beautiful environment for people. I always dress the set. And I'm like, so where's the table and the two chairs that I'm supposed to have? And the woman said, table and chairs? No, no. We need you to be doing walk around. And I went, oh, okay. And then she went, palm readings. And I went, what? I'm like, here's my contract that says tarot readings. And the thing is, I don't read palms. And she went, we wanted a walk around palm reader. And this is how long ago this was. This was the handspring visor era. So I said, Lord. Okay. And then she said to me, see what you can do, because they don't want tarot. That's, you know, they called it devil worship, which is ridiculous. But yeah, she
but
said,
palmistry is okay. That's
right. Funny. Exactly. I still don't understand the logic behind that, but whatever. And so she said, yeah, we need you to be doing palm readings and you're going to be spending the next 4 hours walking around. It was a lumber company somewhere in near Williamsburg, Virginia. And she said, walk around palm readings. And I went, okay. So I went into the bathroom. I took out, I had a little app that was supposed to teach you palm readings, happened to be on the handspring visor. And I went, okay, let me look and see what the lines are called and what to do. And I spent
then
about
you're doing cold readings the rest of the time.
Exactly. I did cold readings and they specifically wanted me to read the president of the company who was there. And I read his palm, amazed him, and they were just thrilled to pieces.
Well,
and
there you go.
It was one of those moments in my life where I realized, okay, all of this stuff, whatever we're doing, all boils down to following your intuition and how well do you know people. And then with the goal of delighting my customer, I had to make it happen.
I'm still back on the fact that you couldn't get furniture from a lumber company.
I know, right? No, I mean, they didn't.
That's my thing.
They just were not, they were stingy with the furniture. They were not interested.
People don't read the contracts. People, you know, it's funny because the general public is like, why did Beyonce have white M&Ms in her rider? It's to make sure that the people had read the rider. That's why you have stuff like that in there. It's not because you're a diva. It's not because you're privileged. It's because you want some indication that the client or their crew has actually read the rider and is going to be able to set you up the way you need to be set up so that the client can get the biggest value for their dollars.
Sure. And especially in those situations where, like you said, you want to be prepared for anything. I was absolutely not prepared to do palm readings for 4 hours, but in order to, the client was there, but also the agent was the DJ for the night. And so she was very interested in making sure that I did what the client asked, even though she saw the contract and said, yep, you're right. It was supposed to be sit down tarot readings, but that's not what they want. And so in those moments, we're sort of stuck in the space of, okay, how do I think creatively to make this work? Because I didn't have the skill set, but I had to figure out how to do it. And a lot of times I think performers of any sort are find themselves in those situations where there's a miscommunication, the client didn't know or whatever, and you have to think fast to amaze your customers and clients.
And sometimes the energy, that nervous energy of having to improvise actually propels you to a higher level and you end up doing better than you might have otherwise done.
Absolutely. And and that was luckily for me what happened. It could have been a bust. I could have read everyone wrong. But we are in the business of exceeding expectations, I think, in part because so often performance art of whatever type is undervalued or devalued. So I would love to talk about it. This week we decided we were going to talk about how to amaze and delight your customers. And I would love to talk with you about what that means to you. What does it mean to delight your customers?
Well, my starting place is always what people's experience generally is in business. And I've been in several businesses in my life. As you know, I was an investment professional for more than 2 decades. Mm-hmm. I've been doing magic for more than 5 decades. I've done public speaking. And in every one of those areas, one of the things they have in common is that most of the people that are in those areas are not particularly competent. Mm. And they don't necessarily even meet the minimum standards. And so a lot of people, I mean, you know, I always talk about, you call the health insurance company, or, you know, if it's Cigna, which stands for callous indifference gives no aid, you know, you get the message that says your call is important to us. but not important enough for us to actually hire enough people to answer the phones. That is most Americans' experience of customer service. When you have a company that does better than that, and there are companies that are famous for doing better than that, they end up gaining almost cult status with customers and clients. They build tremendous client loyalty. And so you have these cult brands like Harley Davidson and Apple and Chick-fil-A and some of these others because of the corporate culture and the attitude they instill in people who are serving the public. And so we can learn from that. But the sad fact is, where I'm starting from is the bar is already set so low, unfortunately, that merely being honest and competent is enough to set you above the pack in most cases. That's sad. Now, we don't want to settle for that. We obviously want to be excellent. We want to be superb. We want to be, and one of the reasons we want to be excellent is kind of selfish. We want people to be such raving lunatic fans by the end of the gig that they're going to tell all their friends about us, and that's going to get us more business, because our show or our art is always our best advertisement. No matter what we do on the web, no matter what we do with email or social media, the show itself, the art itself, is always going to be our best brochure, our best advertisement. And so making that the best it can be is what's going to get us a lot of business, a lot of referrals. You know, when I do a show, I want people in the audience to, you know, call me up and book me. I want them to ask for my information. I want to get their information. I want them to be thinking, if they come up to me after the show and say, yeah, you know, you would be really good for this thing, and they mention a specific event that's coming up, that's a really good sign. That means that they're picturing me doing what I do for their group, because they think, oh, this guy's going to be great. Because again, their standard is so low. Most corporate bookers just want an act that's not going to get them fired. And we've talked about that. So if we can go way above and beyond that in any aspect, or in all aspects, then that's going to be huge. That's going to be huge. And it's going to snowball. And we're going to find that we're going to get a lot of referrals and a lot of repeat bookings and a lot of word of mouth.
I'm taking a second to take all of that in, because there's so much in there. To me, when we're talking, no,
freaking out of the fire hose again.
No, it's great. It's great. I tell everybody that I talk to on the show that I have embraced the pause. I want to take a moment and synthesize everything that you've said and really make sure that I've listened and understood, so that I can then ask knowledgeable questions. And the thing to me about this, about what you said, having the bar set low, that's part of it, of course, is that there are different tiers, we would say, of the way people are doing what they're doing. And yet, this thing that you just said about your best calling card is the show you've done, that really, it gives me hope, except for, and this is something I want to sort of go, how do you get to the place where the client can show you that? In other words, you're practicing, you're doing all of the things, you get the gig, and then, like I just was talking about with the reading palms for 4 hours, you end up in a situation where things have either gone wrong or the expectations are very different than what you've done. And it could be a negative experience, but all of a sudden, as the performer, it's your job to turn it into a positive one. So where do you learn those lessons?
Well, I think it starts with mastering your craft. All art is craft. And you must have known that at some point you would need to know how to read palms, because you had that app on your phone. You had that resource available to you. And you could go and do the secret preparation part of the trick, where you go, you know, behind the wallpaper, under the rug, and do your studying. You know, and so sometimes you just have to, having the knowledge. I mean, one time I was doing a Halloween party at a country club, and it was a family event. And I was doing a stand-up show for the kids. And then after the show, they said, oh, we'd like you to do an hour of close-up, you know, wandering around in the banquet hall, you know, the room where the tables are set up and everybody's going to be eating dinner, which was not really part of the deal originally. And I had not brought any of my close-up material with me. I just had my stage stuff. But I've been doing this for a while. And I know stuff. And I knew that a typical banquet hall was a target-rich environment in terms of magic props I could use. So I'm doing tricks with cloth napkins, cocktail napkins, coffee cups, knives, forks, spoons, the kids' cups, you know, all this stuff, all these different things, because I knew how to do that. I could just pick up, and I had a couple other things on me that enabled me to do even more stuff. But the impression was that I just walk up to the table and pick up what's on the table and do magic with it, which is super, super strong, because I had done my homework. I'd done my studying. So that's the first part, is we do our homework so that we have the knowledge base, we have the wherewithal to flex, to adapt. And by adapting to what the client wants, there was a company picnic, and I was supposed to do a strolling close up, and it was about 1,000,000 degrees. And so they ended up with 150 people huddled in the shade under a pavilion, all eating and drinking and basically pouring ice cubes all over themselves. And they're like, there's no place to wander. And the client just said, why don't you just set up? Can you set up and just do a stand-up show? So again, knowing how to take the material I already had and make it play bigger, I was able to just do a stand-up show. And then when they gave me the Google review, it was fantastic, because they're like, you know, we threw Eric a monkey wrench. You know, we threw him a curve, and he just totally adapted. And, you know, a corporate booker looking at that's going to be like, oh, Greg, this guy's a pro. That's what you want, you know, when you can do that. And it happens, you know, more often than people realize, where you walk in and the client's kind of different. Sometimes it's a very minor thing. I did a holiday party in January for a company, and it was an agency gig. So I didn't really talk to the client. And when I got there, you know, I'm prepared to do my close-up strolling, and it's about 250 people. I'm going to be there a couple hours. And the client says to me, oh, the president of the company is here. He flew in, and he's really a big fan of mentalism. And I didn't really have any mentalism material on me. I ended up adapting a classic magic trick and turning it into a piece of mentalism that I'm now using in my regular act all the time. It's one of the strongest things I do now, because I just said, oh, you know, just the stress of that, something snapped. I went, oh, I, you know, I could do this. Oh, okay, now I get it. Bam. And it worked. And you know, the CEO was charmed, and the client was happy, and, you know, it's a happy ending. So that's our job. I mean, we're in the service, no matter what we're doing, we're in the service business. We're in the business of solving problems for our clients, serving our clients. And so we need to figure out what that means. Now, we do have to have boundaries. There are times when a client will demand things that are simply unreasonable. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want somebody to lock you in the basement with the kids and no adults at the birthday party while the adults are upstairs drinking. You know, don't ask me how I know. That's just unreasonable. You know, if you're hired for, you've got a sophisticated client that knows exactly what close-up magic is, or, you know, and they hire you for close-up, and then you show up and they put you in a boardroom or a conference room with, you know, 30 children and say, do a stand-up show. I'm like, no, we're going to have a conversation with the agent. So, you know, there is some stuff I will not eat there. I do have boundaries, but if it's reasonable, and if it's, especially if it's just a misunderstanding, yeah, absolutely. You know, dude, this is another reason why I have that emergency lunchbox show, because I cannot tell you how many times people are like, oh, the close-up was great. Can you do like one piece for can we gather everybody around you, do one or two things for the whole group? And I'm like, yeah, because why? Because I've anticipated that. It's happened enough that I've anticipated that. So one of the number one things we can do to exceed expectations is, you know, be able to flex with the situation, be able to handle the curveball, do something that's a little different than we thought we were going to do, whether it's because the client had a last minute request thrown to them by their superiors, which happens, or because they just simply, it was a miscommunication, they didn't read the contract. No matter what the reason is, our job is to make that event or make that client happy, make that super successful for them, because it's about making them look good for their bosses. And so yeah, that's one of the big ways. There are many other ways we can exceed expectations, but that's one of the big ones.
I love that you said that, and it's something that I think about, and also sort of try to incorporate into everything I do. I actually meditated on this topic this morning because I was thinking about it and went, okay, let me set an intention about encapsulating this thought for myself. And what came to me through my meditation was surprising and delighting your clients is about turning anticipation into applause. And I went, okay, that's a great way of putting it. Good to go. But one of the things that has to happen there
is... Yeah, I'm
is,
stealing that.
Get in line, buddy. But here's the thing, though. Here's the thing that we need to think about is that part of it, that anticipation. So much of that is, yes, I'm anticipating whatever show you're going to do from their perspective, but also what has that person had to go through to get this thing to come together, right? So we need to put ourselves, I think, into their heads as much as possible, because we don't know what they've gone through to put this together, whatever the this is, whether it's a magic performance, a concert, a whatever, doesn't matter, a keynote speech. From their perspective, they don't know your perspective. And since they're paying you, they likely don't care about your perspective. But we, as the end performer, have to care about theirs. And so talk to me a little bit about what thought processes you go through to think about what their perspective is and how you're working with them to make things easier on them. Because I have a feeling that you do what I do, and that is try to make it as easy on them as possible to hire you, to work with you, and to pay you, and then perhaps to recommend you and to hire you again next time. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I totally agree. Well, there's a couple of thoughts here. One is that, you know, unless people are buying a ticket to see you, the guests are not there to see you. They're there for a different reason, and you're, you know, an additional fun, you know, perk, or an additional, you're icing on the cake, you're the cherry on the sundae. You know, so a lot of times, you know, you and I are the difference between hiring entertainment or having a seventh appetizer. So, you know, if we have that perspective, we realize people are really not there to see us necessarily. Then we will have the right attitude. The other thing is, if we're part of a larger event, you're right. You don't know the hoops that that person has jumped through, the stress that they're under. So my goal is to be, and I joke with clients about this, because most of the clients that book me are women. They're HR professionals, or they're executive assistants in the corporate realm, or they're doing a charity fundraiser or whatever. They're mostly women. And so I joke that I want to be the low maintenance man in their life. That the idea is, I want them to say, oh, Eric's on it. We booked Eric. We're done. We're good to go. You know, I'm going to go have a cigarette or whatever. You know, I'm going to go have a yogurt.
Cup of coffee.
I can relax. I want to be the part of their event that they don't have to worry about. They can check it off the list, which is one of the reasons why I generally get paid in advance on booking, because then it's done. They don't have to chase me down with a check the day of. It's off their list. And I use that phrase. I say, look, we do this, and it'll be off your list, and I'll show up and we'll do it. And people, the relief in people's voices, I mean, you can hear it, that, oh God, good, that's going to be off the list. I can focus on this other stuff. Because you don't know the hard problems they're having. Maybe that day is, you know, it's the same day as a bunch of high school graduations, and they cannot rent chairs and tables anywhere, you know, or tablecloths, or they're having trouble with whatever. You don't know. So, yeah, I want to be the part that's easy. And part of that is the entire process. And it's different depending on what market you're in. With corporate clients, I do a lot of handholding and a lot of phone calls and a lot of, you know, being present. When I was in radio, my old station manager had a great phrase. He said, we want to be state of the art without losing our state of the heart. And so unlike banks and other corporations that use technology to build a wall between customers and customer service, what I want to do is use technology to make it easier for them to get their job done and for me to be more responsive to them. So for example, when I was doing years ago, when I was doing mostly kids' birthday parties, I set up my website with all the prices and packages so they could actually just click and book me right then, basically pay a deposit or pay for it or whatever. And they would know, you know, I had my calendar up, and so they would know if I was available that date or not. And I started looking at the timestamps, because I get the form saying this person's booked you, and or they're interested in the show. Here's the date. Tell them if you're available. And the timestamps on those emails and those forms, Isolde, these are birthday moms, right? Timestamps for midnight, 1 in the morning, 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning. These are women who are working all day. They're taking care of their families in the evening. They're helping their kids with their homework. They're cleaning the house. And by the time they have time to actually book entertainment for their kid's birthday, it's the wee hours. They're getting no sleep.
Right.
And these are women, if I had said, you have to call me, they never would have booked me. They don't have time. And in some cases, they can't call me during a business day because they're working at a company that doesn't allow personal phone calls during the day. Or here in Washington, D.C., a lot of them are working in secure locations and defense installations where their cell phones locked in their glove compartment all day, and they can't make a phone call. So, yeah, if they're looking for somebody to make it easy. And by making it easy, making the process easy, again, we can show up and flex. That's great. But the second biggest thing we can do is make the booking process easy, making the sales process easy for people. A great book in this regard, especially if you're using a website to sell whatever you're selling, is Seth Godin, who's the father of email marketing. Seth Godin has a lot of great books, but my favorite is something called The Big Red Fez. And it's a picture of a monkey wearing a fez on the front. And it's his book on web design. And it's a book that's at least 25 years old, but the principles are eternal. His metaphor is, if you're doing your marketing, you're building your website, you want to make it easy for the monkey. You've got a monkey wearing a fez, and all they want is a banana. They just want to find a banana. And so maybe they just want to call you. But if they have to go through an entire menu and find your contact page to find your phone number and call you, that's going to be harder than if your contact information is floating at the top of every single page, or if it's a one-page website, and as they scroll down, your phone number stays at the top of the page, right in plain sight. You see the difference there? Little things like that are the difference between getting the lead, getting people making contact and people moving on to the next guy or the next gal. So if we can make the booking process, make it easy for them to want us, make it easy for them to book us. If you're an entertainer, and we can do a whole thing on websites, but if you're an entertainer, they basically want to know, is this person any good? Are they available for my date, and can I afford them? And so the website is, yes, we're good. And then when I'm doing my corporate stuff, because it's so customized, they have to contact me to find out my availability and my price. But I do try to make it easy. The other thing is, I learned a long time ago to communicate to people in the way that they like to be communicated with. In other words, if somebody contacts you by email, a direct email, they want to use email. They don't have time to talk on the phone, usually. Sometimes I'll ask them for a phone call and we'll see how that goes. If they call you, then they're comfortable on the phone. And so I try to mirror what they're doing. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. And I think, to me, in listening to you, this whole notion of being frictionless, of making it as easy as possible for someone to book you, it's one of the things that'll get you the gig. And I think that's great. But the thing that I'm interested in thinking about this is, okay, so if you make it super easy, if you and the client have negotiated and figured out, yes, you're available, this is your price, that you're going to do this event, et cetera, et cetera. There's a process there for me, again, that has to take care of you as well. Like you mentioned, you have to enforce those boundaries sometimes. And I have been left in a room full of hormone carbonating seventh graders when the teacher just left when I was doing a school show. And the teacher, it's illegal for teachers to do that, but she just went, oh good, I'm out. There's another adult in the room, I'm out of here. And I didn't even realize she'd gone until all of a sudden I went, oh. So in those moments, how do you also take care of yourself as part of the process of delighting your clients and your customers?
Well, sometimes you just have to gut it out. Sometimes you take out your phone and you text the principal and you say, help, but a lot of that can be taken care of during the booking process. And that has to do with communicating with the clients. And again, this is another area. We want to make the booking process easy, but we also want to communicate. And what I've found is that there are a couple of things that really help there. Number one is, and most of my events are booked, I book them on the phone because I'm dealing with customized corporate social and charity events for adults. So a lot of that, you could just get things done faster on the phone than you can with back and forth on email. What I found is that, just believe it or not, just listening to the client. You know, we talked about this before, my five magic words on a sales call, when they're calling me or I'm calling them to in response to an email or whatever, my five magic words are, tell me about your event. And then I just shut up and I take notes and I let them talk until they're done talking. And because it's amazing how much detail you will find out. And I've found over the years that I have avoided so many catastrophes because, like, right at the end, they'll say, oh, and by the way, this is going to be outdoors and we don't have a tent.
What?
Wait a minute. Whoa, it's August 25th and you're outdoors without a tent. Hang on a second. Or we're going to have it rain or shine. Okay, do you have a covering? You know, so there are things that will generate questions, and then we're communicating. So I want them, but a lot of people just don't feel listened to. They don't feel heard. And of course, we do active listening where we're reflecting back, saying, "Oh, let me make sure I get this right. This is what you're saying, right? Okay, good." And let them continue. But I let them tell me what they want to tell me and dump the file. And sometimes they'll talk about some of the other difficulties they're having. Sometimes I can help them with another resource. They're saying, like, we're really having trouble with catering. Can you recommend somebody? Yeah, I can. Absolutely. Or do you know somebody at a party rental place we're having trouble with furniture? Yeah, I can help with that. And now I'm not a supplicant. I'm not the salesman desperately looking for the sale. I am the trusted advisor. I'm part of the team. I'm the consultant that's going to help them do their job better, because I've done this a million times before and I have knowledge they don't have. So that whole thing again, and even if one of my philosophies is, when people call me, I want to give them value. If on the first call, if they never book me, I want them to go away with an idea or a thought or a tool or something that's going to make it easier for them to do their event. Because people remember that stuff. And even if they can't afford me this year, surprising how many times they put it in the budget for next year and say, oh, yeah, we're coming back. And they'll book me the following year. Because I was the guy that wasn't just trying to make the buck, I was the guy that was trying to help.
And that's so important. And it's interesting to hear you say that, because I've had clients who, for example, don't book me for the gig, but they do contact me. I have a couple of clients where they love unusual music. And so I'll get these phone calls. Isolde, we need someone who plays the crumb horn. Do you play the crumb horn? No, I don't, but I happen to know a crumb horn player. And so I will hand those off. But then when they can and want to and are having an event for which I'd be good, they contact me for that too. So being the top of mind first person they think of when something like that happens is really important. So I know my niche. It's weird music. And I have a lot of clients and a lot of agents who will come to me for those kinds of things. So how do we do that though? For example, I've done it over years, talking and helping and all of that. Is there another way that you can think of to showcase what you can do for clients? Is it during the event? Is it after the event? How do we keep them superbly delighted with us as far as what we bring to the table?
Well, there's a couple of different ways I do that. That's a great question. First is, during the sales call, I will tell them, I said, well, if I've done a similar event, I will tell them what I've done for other clients. And so they can picture it. I want to tell them a story that puts a picture in their mind of me successfully, doing what I do at their event and making their event great. So that I can tell them what I've done for other clients. The second thing I do is I will customize the event to them. For example, I mean, this is a trivial example, but there are a lot of, like, company holiday parties where people will say, oh, could you do something specific to our company? And I'm like, yeah, what are some of the inside jokes? What are the jokes? There's one company where the CEO went to Virginia Tech and the CFO went to University of Virginia, so they're big rivals. And so I was able to do the old joke about, University of Virginia, you're an alum, you're a Wahoo. That's great. I saw the Rolling Stones play the University of Virginia and the Rolling Stones won, so it's that because terrible, terrible football team historically. So you know, that got, you know, that's the kind of stuff, if you do it in the right spirit and everything, you can just have a lot of fun. And so there's a certain level of customization. If you know that somebody is an avid golfer, I can put in a routine that has a golf theme and bring them up to help. And everybody's like, oh, okay. And so now I'm like part of the crowd. Sometimes people ask you to do special things. The first military event I ever did was a 90th birthday for an Air Force general who had helped develop the intercontinental ballistic missile. And it was the last reunion of this unit. And I, this was such a big deal that they staffed me with a full bird colonel. My assistant for the evening was a colonel. That's how big a deal this was. And I was hired because one of the guys is an amateur magician, and he hired me and he said, can you pretend to be the head waiter? And then you set up ahead of time, you'll disappear, then you'll come in, pretend to be the head waiter. I'll look around and wonder where the thing is, and I'll start doing some magic. And then you heckle me. He wanted me to heckle him and then take over. And it was hilarious, and it worked incredibly well. I'm getting bread and water for people at their tables. And then the guys, you know, the guy gets up there and I'm like, oh my gosh. And I'm heckling him and people. And it was funny because the audience almost turned on me because they're like, who is this guy? And then I started pulling coins out of people's ears and they were like, oh, okay, we get the joke. So again, not every idea that a client has is a good one. And sometimes we have to kind of gently lead them in another direction. No, I'm not going to dress up as Spock for the presidential inaugural banquet. Thank you very much. But you know, when we can customize things for people, that is more than they're likely to get from others. This is, of course, de rigueur in some areas like trade shows, where the whole point is that you're doing a custom presentation for the people that they want to make into clients. So, you know, so some of that is just built into it. But it can be in any market. My friend Phil Ackerley out in Northern Nevada is a terrific magician. He does a lot of kids' birthday parties, and he does something I've never seen before. He gets a lot of these very large silk handkerchiefs. They're like 22 feet by 2 feet. And he has these graphics, and he will get a birthday graphic with a kid's name on it. And so what he'll do is he'll take an art board, art table, and he'll blow up this graphic to the size of the handkerchief, and then he'll lay the handkerchief over it. And with permanent markers, he will trace the graphic. So he ends up with a custom, what looks like a custom printed silk scarf that says happy birthday with a lot of fancy graphics and has the kid's name on it, or happy 8th birthday or happy 10th birthday. And it's, and then he'll produce that at the end of the show and give it to the kid as a gift. That's a lot of work. But do you know how, I mean, he fills his calendar with referrals. He doesn't have to advertise his birthday shows, because every kid there wants that for their birthday party, and they're going to bang on their parents. They're going to, you know, grab, and they're going to be like, Dad, can we have Phil? Dad, can we have Phil? Can we have Phil? You know, and there's no better marketing than that. So,
oh, for sure.
So, yeah. So you can be very, you can take this as far as you want. During the booking process, I will ask, when I was doing kids' birthdays, I used to ask kids entertainers say, we'll make your kid the star of the show. Well, not every kid wants to be the star of the show. Some kids are really shy. Some kids are on the spectrum and they can't handle it. Well, it depends. So I used to ask, is the birthday child, how comfortable are they being the center of attention? And the parent just is, again, the relief in their voice, like, oh, thank God somebody's asking that. Or, oh, wow, I'm glad you asked that. I hadn't even thought of that. They're like, yes, they're really outgoing. They're the leader of the pack. They're the ringleader. They're going to be fine. Or they're pretty shy. And what I will do is I will adapt my show to that. That's, again, a form of customization. And we're exceeding expectations because we're trying to be sensitive. I always ask, are there going to be special needs of people in the audience? Are there people who have hearing or vision or cognitive impairments or mobility issues? I want to know that ahead of time so that I can then adapt my show to those audience members so everybody has a great time. And I'll tell you what, if you do that, you're asking questions. You're definitely going to set yourself apart from the competition. In terms of customization, is all that you've already got a built-in advantage. When you're doing tarot readings, it's all about customization. What you're selling is a unique personal experience where people are seen and heard and shown respect in that way, because listening equals respect.
I agree completely.
By respecting our clients, by showing that level of respect, all of a sudden we now have the ability to build a relationship that will get us the bookings for years and years to come. My friend Dave Thoman is so good at this. He has community events that he's, as a magician, he's been booked 30 years in a row at some of these events. It's unbelievable. I have a legacy gig. I don't do a lot of kid shows anymore. There's a daycare in Burtonsville, Maryland, at a church, and it's about 100 Hispanic and Asian kids. They're wonderful kids. And I do this holiday show for them, and it's always my last holiday show of the year. It's usually Thursday or Friday before the Christmas weekend. And it's just one of the most fun things. And as you know, my son Ian's birthday is December 22nd, so sometimes it's on his birthday. And when it was on his birthday, I brought him along, and they had a cake for him.
Mm.
That's how the relationship is. Okay, so I do it last year, and this young man comes up, very well-spoken, young man almost as tall as I am. And he said to me, "You're not going to believe this." I said, "What?" He said, "I remember seeing you when I was 3 years old." And I said, "What?" He said, "I just graduated from University of Maryland with a degree in library science, computer science." He said, "But my mom's on staff here at the daycare, and I remember you coming here when I was three." And I'm like, "How old are you now?" He said, "I'm 23. I'm like, "Wait, I've been doing this for 20 years? What? What?" And the booker looked over and he said, "Yeah, it's been 20 years. I was like, "Oh my gosh, didn't even occur to me. But sometimes you can do that. Those are the kind of relationships you want to build. It's so much easier to get rebooked than it is to find a new client. So much easier.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
So by giving our clients that premium experience, that extra special, giving them the Rolls Royce service, even if they haven't bought the Rolls Royce, and they talk, and people talk to each other and they'll say, "Oh yeah, he took really good care of us," or "she took really good care of us."
I think that notion of your clients feeling like you've got them in the palm of your hand and in a caring way, not just like, ha-ha, is so important.
Yes.
But there's also stuff to talk about as far as surprising and delighting your clients during the process, right? For me, it's always about storytelling. For example, when I'm doing a music show, well, when I'm doing tarot, it's all storytelling because I'm looking at symbols and I'm interpreting them and I'm telling a story for the client that is unique to that client, which is always a delight and a lot of fun for me. With music, I tell the stories about the histories of the songs and how they relate to what to where the clients are, to where the audience is, et cetera, et cetera. I'd love to know about what you do and what role storytelling plays in creating moments of surprise and delight during the performance.
Well, there's a number of different ways. I do storytelling in my show. I've just added a new routine, which uses a very old prop that's primarily used for kids shows, and I'm doing it for adults, and there isn't a dry eye in the house. It's fantastic. There's different levels of stories. I can tell a story within the show. The show itself can be a story. When you're performing magic for somebody, you're actually giving them a story that they can tell their friends about what happened to them. And you want to make the story, you want them to be able to draw with a crayon or explain it in one sentence. You want to keep it clear and simple so that they can tell people about it, I do a trick, a very famous old classic trick of magic called the egg bag. And my name is Henning, so I have to do a trick with an egg. And I tell this to my family history where we were actually the poultry keepers for the King of England. And they were free range chickens. So all we had to do is make sure nobody ate them but the King of England. So we had a lot of time on our hands. And so we became philosophers. And we know which came first. And we're not telling you. And so it just goes on like that. Because my coat of arms is actually three eggs over a meadow. It's one of the oldest coat of arms in the British Isles. It's super simple. So, yeah. So those are the kinds of things people enjoy. But the performance itself can create stories. And again, during the booking process, I will tell stories about gigs that I've done. And I'll say, this is similar to something else I did, because it reassures them that, oh, this isn't his first rodeo. Okay. He's done a similar thing to what I'm doing. Not identical, but something similar. And that was successful. And here's how I made it successful. And you're walking them through that scenario. But another way is just by communicating frequently. It's astonishing to me. People will book an event and then they'll ghost the client. You know, one of the biggest gigs I ever got was because a magician had been booked and then the client could not get in touch with them in any manner, not by email, not by phone, not by text, couldn't reach them. And so they finally found me and I ended up taking over a gig that ended up lasting. It was a repeat gig that was multiple times a month for 6.5 years. It's the biggest corporate gig I ever had because somebody couldn't return a phone call. Again, the bar is pretty low. What I have found is I stay in touch. I have, and this is, again, this is my ADHD is, you know, I have to deal with that. But thank God for smartphones because I put in reminders and, you know, things of, okay, I'm going to call them 2 weeks before the event. I'm going to call them a week before the event. I'm going to call them 2 days before the event. And they know that I'm going to call them before they call me to be reassured that, yes, I'm going to be there or everything's okay. Are we all set up? I'm going to be proactive about that. I'm going to over-communicate because over-communication redundancy is a good thing. It does prevent a lot of problems and it has a lot of last minute things and misunderstandings have been prevented or fixed that way. I'm going to tell you such a silly little thing. It's just so, it's almost stupid, but you wouldn't believe what this does for the client relationship. If you use Apple Maps, for example, I have an iPhone and I have the gig and I have in the appointment section in the calendar, I have the address and I know how long it's going to take me to get there when I need to start. If you tap on the address, it brings up Apple Maps so you can get directions. So then when I'm ready to leave, I get my directions and it comes up and there's a little thing where it says share ETA. I can text the client my ETA. I can say to them, I'm leaving my house now. Here's when I expect to arrive. And given the legendary traffic in Washington, D.C., that is incredibly valuable in terms of giving clients peace of mind. It's again, part of that. Eric's here. I can relax. That's part of that, creating that mindset where I'm the guy they don't have to worry about. Just texting them my ETA, texting them when I've left the house. I expect to be there at this time, around this time. There might be some traffic. And by the way, when you share your ETA with somebody, if you get stuck in traffic and the ETA changes, it automatically texts the client or texts the person that you're sharing with to adjust with a new ETA. It does it automatically. I don't have to fool with it while I'm driving. So that's just one of those things where it's like, I guarantee you none of my competition is doing that. There's nobody else out there doing that. And so understanding the client's pain points, understanding the difficulties. I was hired at the last minute to do the town of Capitol Heights, Maryland. I got a call a Friday before Easter. I got a call on Good Friday. And the client was absolutely apoplectic. They'd hired a magician. The magician had gotten COVID. Not their fault. Nobody's fault, but they were stuck. They didn't have a magician. They were doing a block party and they had Easter egg hunt and they wanted a magician for the kids. And she called me and said, can you do it? I happen to be available. I said, sure. And now I could have taken advantage of this. They're like, we'll pay anything. We don't care. We just want you. I said, what were you going to pay the other guy? And she told me, I said, okay, I'll do it for that. What did I just do? I just made her job easier. She doesn't have to go back and get a new budget. She's already got the money allocated. All she has to do is cut a check. She said, I'll have a check for you when you arrive. Great. And then I get there and I'm supposed to do one show at a certain time, but all the kids show up early. She said, can you move your show earlier? Or even can you do two shows? We'll pay you more if you want. And I said, sure, I'll do two shows. I'm already here. So I ended up doing an early show and a late show and I didn't ask them for any more money. Again, exceeding expectations. Why? Because I'm solving their problem. She immediately came back and said, I got some stuff in June that I want to book you for. Okay. So that's, again, that creates that relationship where it's like, yeah, this is a guy who's going to come through. This is the guy we want. And there's one more thing that can really, and this is the pièce de résistance. This is the sorbet at the end of the meal. This is the cherry on the sundae. Saying thank you, saying thank you. After the gig, I sent a text, I sent an email that just says thank you, and it mentions specific things that happened during the event, so they know it's not a form letter that I wrote in advance. I thank them, I compliment them on how great a job they did designing the event and running the event. I point out things that they did that were good for, made it better for the guests. I praise them. I thank them for booking me. I praise them. And there is no marketing. I don't ask them for a Google review in that email. I'll do it later. I don't ask them to book me for anything else. It's just a thank you. It's not a receipt. And a receipt is not a thank you, but it's just a thank you. And one of the things I used to do, and I probably should do again, I used to have pre-addressed stamped envelopes to the client and then a say a thank you note. And before I left the parking lot, I'd be leave the gig. I'd be done with the gig. I'd sit in my car in the parking lot and write the thank you note, handwritten, put it in the envelope, seal it up, and put in a mailbox on the way home. And they would get it the next day or the day after. When you send somebody a handwritten thank you note, it's like they freak out. It's like you baked them a loaf of bread. It's like you knitted them a sweater. That's what it feels like to people, because nobody does it. And but most of the time, nobody even says thank you. When I was in the investment business, I used to have client appreciation dinners. And I had one guy that came and he said, I've been investing for 30 years. You're the first broker that's ever even said thank you, and you bought me a steak dinner. And he referred me to his mom, who had $15 million worth of original issue bank stock that she needed to get rid of for tax purposes. So, you know, and I don't do it for that. You don't do it to get more business. You do it because that's the way you want to be treated. I mean, if we wanted to distill this down to one sentence, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. How do you want to be treated by companies you do business with? What is your pet peeve about customer service? What bothers you? What would you rather have? Build that into your business so you're doing that for other people. That's really what it boils down to.
Yep. And the same goes if you are leading a team, actually.
Oh, you, even more so.
You know, for me, leading the Philosopher's Stones, the Caroling Group, so much of what I do is making sure that I give them everything they need to excel at what they do, right? So this, so much of this is that, is making sure that you are helping everyone else be the best at what they need to do. And that goes along with whether you're a teammate or whether you're the performer or sometimes whether you're the client, because yeah, I agree with you completely. I would love if all the companies I work with treated me the way I treat my clients. That would be delightful. But unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, I don't know, it doesn't happen that way very much. And so your notion about just doing things the way you would like them to be done is really, it's simple, but it's also very profound.
It's so, simple, but it's not easy. It's
yeah, exactly.
Simple, but it's not easy. It's exactly. Like magic or tarot reading or the art that we do. It's like painting a watercolor. It's simple, looks simple, not easy. So yeah, and it's a constant. It's something that we're going to learn about all of our lives. We're going to be refining this process and coming up with ideas and creative solutions to exceed expectations. We're going to be finding ways to do this our entire lives. It's a never ending process. Which is exciting, because it means that, you know, next week or next year, I might come upon an idea I've never thought of before that's going to, you know, take my business another step up, that's going to level me up in terms of the client experience, because that's really what I'm selling. I mean, you know, and again, it's just being aware of what other people need. This may sound completely ridiculous, but You've lived in Maryland for a long time, Isolde, mm-hmm. So you're going to understand what I'm saying. If you see pictures of me, you'll see that I trim my mustache a lot. You can see all of my lip. Both lips are visible. My mustache is trimmed very short. It's not the best look in the world, but I do it Do you know why I do that?
No.
Because Maryland has an unusually high population of deaf and hard of hearing people. And you never know when you're going to run into somebody who needs to, in addition to sign language, would like to be able to read your lips. So, and there's a historical reason for that. Okay. We had the Methodist Church began in America, began in Maryland, and they had an agency called the Deaf Referral Service, which now has been absorbed into Maryland state government and is now the Maryland State Deaf Referral Service. And then you had Gallaudet University, the very first university for the deaf in Washington, D.C., very close to Maryland. And then in the early 60s, you had German measles, a rubella epidemic in the United States. And so people who are my age, third wave baby boomers, if you're pregnant and you get German measles, your child, the baby is usually born deaf. A lot of people don't know that. If you're pregnant and if a pregnant woman gets German measles, the baby is often born deaf. And so we had a huge number of kids right around 1960, 61 that were born deaf. And in Maryland, we already had the infrastructure. You had Gallaudet, so you had all these teachers, and they started the model schools for the deaf in Columbia and Frederick and Germantown, several campuses. So you had elementary and high schools for the deaf. And what happened was people found out about this around the country, and parents who had a child that was born deaf migrated to Maryland because that's where this infrastructure was. That's where the services they needed were. And I went to college at Western Maryland College, which is now McDaniel College outside of Baltimore, which at the time had a big deaf education master's program. And there's a lot of cross-pollination between Gallaudet students who were and Western Maryland, where you do your undergrad at one school and then go do your grad work at the other. So we had a lot of deaf students on campus, and everybody in campus took American Sign Language because, first of all, it's an easy credit, but you just needed it because we had a high percentage of deaf people there. So you just get into this mentality of thinking, okay. And when I was doing restaurant magic, I used to run into tables where it would be a table of deaf people, and they're like, "No, I'm coming up," and I'm going, and they're like, "No, we don't want to see the magic." And then I start signing. I show them my name sign, the magic E, and I'm doing, and then all of a sudden, the whole experience is transformed for them because somebody is meeting them where they are. So that's why I trim my mustache, because I could be anywhere and I'm going to run into a deaf person and we need to be able to communicate.
And it's
That's the
actually, oh, go ahead.
attitude. That's just, again, in a nutshell, kind of the attitude. And I'm not some great, paragon of virtue here. These are hard lessons that I had to learn by making a lot of mistakes and doing it wrong. So don't want anybody to think that I'm, pumping myself up or anything. It's just, you get to a place where you start thinking in those terms.
And that's so important that it's a learning process. It's always a learning process. And all we can do is keep making things frictionless and keep being, like you said, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, as sort of the primary goal here, that we want to have these beautiful and satisfying relationships with our customers and clients. So one of the ways to do that, as you said, is to make sure that you make things as easy as possible on them, see things from their perspective, and also exceed their expectations. This has been a terrific conversation, Eric. I appreciate you coming back, as always, for Money Monday. We're gonna have I'm gonna try and figure out how to remember to put in all of the links of the things that you talked about and mentioned during this, like the Red Fez, Seth Godin, who's a I know him and he's a great guy. We've had a conversation. He's a lovely, lovely man.
Yeah, that book is still in print. It's available, where books are sold.
Yeah, and the library, if you're a library person, support your local library.
Absolutely.
Yeah, checking books out of the library, that's another way to surprise and delight is checking books out of the library adds to their numbers so that more libraries stay open. Here in New York City, libraries are, the budgets are slashed to the point where now we don't have Sunday, there's no Sunday service anymore. And that service might truncate again, with the proposed $51 million budget cut or something like that. So support your local libraries. Eric, thank you so much for...
Gee, it sounds like there's an opportunity to do some fundraisers, Isolde.
There you go. Yeah, I'm actually in discussions about that as we speak. So, all right, cool. I mean, you know, because I love the library. I worked in a library all through college. At libraries are my friend. All right, Eric,
well,
thank you.
My son Ian wants to be a librarian. So,
oh,
I'm,
really?
I'm right there with you.
Ah, well.
Yeah, he wants to go into library science.
University of Maryland has one of the best library and science and information technology
yep.
schools in the nation. So yay for him. That's
yep.
awesome. I had
yep.
no idea.
That's the plan.
Ah,
yep.
I love
He's
it.
He's graduating in just about 3 weeks.
Oh, my stars. No, no. That's weird.
Yes.
See,
we're
he,
all
me,
very old, Isolde.
To me, he's still five. But okay.
Yep.
Wow. We've known each other a while, Eric. All right, Eric. Thank you for being part of Money Monday, being part of the Creative Solutions podcast. I appreciate you very much.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Isolde. I hope people can find, I hope we've given some information people can use right away to make their art and their business better.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And if you've been listening, you need to find out more about Eric Henning. As you can tell, you can find him all over the internet. Eric, why don't you give your various socials so that if somebody wants to find your website or you on Instagram
sure.
or the Money Arts Academy, they can.
Well, you can just search on Eric Henning, E-R-I-C-H-E-N-N-I-N-G. I am not the country singer in Nashville. I'm not the retired insurance commissioner of Michigan, nor am I the Swedish scientist who's the world's leading expert on dragonflies. I'm the magic guy. But you can go to erichenningmagic.com. You can go to the Capital Conjurer, virtualparlormagic.com. I have a number of websites. Also, you can go to Washington. If you're in the Washington, D.C. area, you can go to washingtonmagic.com to learn how you can experience D.C.'s best date night at the Arts Club of Washington, which is the old James Monroe Presidential Mansion on I Street. So there's a lot of different ways you can get in touch with me. I'm on Facebook at Henning Magic. I'm also on Instagram at Henning Magic. Money Arts Academy, which is the coaching business that I have for the business side of art for performing and fine artists. I do have a couple of coaching openings at the moment, but just a couple. And I'm working, please be patient. I am working on booting up the YouTube channel so we can provide some really good free content to get people started and on, you know, right now that can be very helpful. But right now we've got this podcast, which is so helpful. And we're going to be turning a lot of this into some YouTube stuff. And I've got so much more material. Oh my gosh.
Well, that's great.
So yeah. So that's what you can do. So yeah, if I can help folks, you know, make a living doing the magic, if I can help them, you know, find a way to manage this passion and so that it's not something that is in the way of their life, but it is at the, you know, a major, what's the way I want to put it? It's, you know, incorporated fully into your life. You know, it's part of who you are. So it needs to be kind of part of what you do. And there are a lot of people who just can't do the art that they want to do because they're, you know, busy, stuck in a job that they would quit in a New York minute if they could get their benefits and income some other way. So I'm trying to help people find a balance. And that's all. I'm just trying to help people find a balance and try to make that work in whatever shape that takes for them, because there's no single right answer for everybody. So that's what we're doing. So yeah, if people want to reach out, mention this podcast and the free 30-minute consultation that's on the moneyartsacademy.com website becomes a free 60-minute consultation. So yay.
That's awesome.
And again, happy to do that for people. Yeah, whatever you need.
I should do that. I should sign up for one and then mention my own name.
you and I have talked about, you could probably write a book, write the book that I would write already. We've had so many of these conversations.
I doubt that. But you know what's interesting? And having said that, one of the things that I want to say about the work that you're doing to help people is that, yes, you work with primarily magicians, but a lot of the principles you're talking about can go through to performing artists in lots of different industries, if you will, musicians, actors. A lot of these principles, a lot of these methodologies are things that you can apply if you're a fine artist or a performing artist or somebody else.
I have a coaching client that I've been helping her set up her photography business. And that's a story for another time, but that could be a really good case study because it's some really amazing things have happened as she has gained confidence in her seeing her own value is what she does. So yeah, it can be a lot of different. Yeah, the principles are the same. No matter what business you're in, no matter what art you're doing, again, you can be a fine artist, you can be a performing artist, you can be a musician, a magician, you can be a puppeteer, you can be a clown, you can be, whatever. You can be a dancer, you can be running a theater company. It doesn't matter. The principles are the same. And knowing basically the basics of how to run a business properly will just relieve so much stress. It'll make things so much easier. And then you can really focus a lot of your more energy on your creative endeavors. And that's what we're really trying to do is free people up to really do their art without the black cloud of financial and business worries hanging over them.
And that notion of having that information, of being able to then apply it, is incredibly helpful. My goodness. All right. Well, cool. I am super grateful that you took the time to be here. And I will see you next Money Monday. Thank you, Eric.
Absolutely, Isolde. And, you know, just remember my favorite tune, you know, the Pink Panther theme.
Da-da.
Dead Ant. Dead, dead ant, ant, dead ant, dead ant, dead ant, dead ant, dead ant.
Yes, because
Little inside joke there, folks.
I woke up to many, many hundreds of ants in my office, and they've been crawling on me. The fact that I remained calm for this hour is—I don't know what it is, but
you're my hero.
I've been covered in ants. This is not good. Like Eddie Izzard, she has a thing about being covered in bees, and I've been covered in ants for the last hour. It's been quite something. Anyway, I'm off to go deal with that. And thank you again, Eric. This has been the Creative Solutions Podcast Money Monday. Come on back next Money Monday, where Eric and I will be talking about yet another way that you can build your business if you are a performing or creative artist. Thank you very much for joining us. And as always, remember to be bold, be creative, and most of all, be kind. While Eric Henning teaches general principles of money and does individual business coaching, he cannot and does not provide investment, tax, or legal advice. Please consult a professional licensed in your place of residence for specific tax, legal, or investment advice. Thanks so much for joining me today. I really appreciate you being here. Please subscribe to the show if you're new, and it would mean the world to me if you told a friend about it. Today's episode was produced by Isolde Trachtenberg and is copyright 2024. As always, please remember this is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Past performance does not guarantee future results, although we can always hope.